So this talk is about whole fire mass balances, nitrogen, phosphorus, both. Want to start that by telling you that I'm hoping that at the end of my presentation you understand what we mean by that, how we use it in New York State, and why we think it is a really useful tool for whole farm evaluation, as well as documentation of progress and feasibility of TMDLs. So to get started with, recognizing the importance of analyzing whole farms and not just the field, not just the animal. There are indicators of sustainability at the field level, things like corn stalk nitrate testing, soil testing itself, crop uptake, field balances for nitrogen or phosphorus. There are indicators at the animal side as well, things like milk urea and nitrogen, feed efficiency indicators. What we're trying here is to put all of that together in a set of indicators for whole farm nutrient use efficiency. And right now it's NPK for us. We hope to soon add also sulfur, and we're thinking about how to add carbon. So this concept of whole farm nutrient mass balances is not new. We didn't start with that. My predecessor actually almost, 25 years ago, already published a paper on mass nutrient balances on dairy farms, and he was looking at it in terms of inputs and exports from the farm divided by tillable acres, and numbers like how many tons of nitrogen per year is not exported compared to what was imported. Here's just an example of that table from 93 when he published this. We took the same core concept and started working with that. We've made some changes, we've added some interpretations, so I'm going to show you what we're doing now with that concept. We take the farm, we draw a boundary around it, and we look at all the nutrients coming in to that farm in terms of feed, fertilizer, maybe some animals brought onto the dairy farm in this case, maybe some bedding manure. All my examples here and all the data are for the dairy systems in the state of New York. This is totally expandable to other industries and other animal operations as well. We are focusing on the dairy industry because that's the predominant industry in New York. So we take all the total volume, total mass, and multiply that times concentrations to get the total inputs of NPK. And then we look at the exports of the farm. And in this case with the dairy, most of it is milk, but there might be some animals leaving the farm, there might be some crops that are being produced and sold to other operations or shared with other operations. And some farms have moved towards significant manure exports as well. Now, if you take the difference between imports and exports and you divide it by tillable acre, you get a balance per land unit. And that is what is for us sort of an estimate of recyclability of those nutrients on the land base that the farm is operating with. On the right side of the balance here, you see a balance per hundredweight of milk, and that is more of a production efficiency indicator for us. So how much phosphorus, how much nitrogen, how much potassium is being used to produce milk. We worked on this for more than a decade, actually, starting with that earlier concept from my predecessor, Stu Klausner, and making changes on that over the many years. And we developed what we call feasible balances. We consider them feasible because farms have shown to us that they can do this over the long term. A couple of number of farms that we followed for many, many years in a row. And we also defined it as environmentally sustainable. We have some evidence that it's environmentally sustainable for the long term as well. We're continuing to work on that aspect. Now we have those feasible balances for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And I'm just going to show you how we combine those two mass balance indicators, pounds per acre and pounds per hundredweight, together using nitrogen as the example. So in this case, nitrogen balances 0 to 105 pounds per acre is called feasible for dairies in the state of New York. We're going to look at this in terms of the balance here, and if you look at that number of 105 and you look at the blue box, that's basically the feasible balance range for those dairies set out against the milk per acre production. So all the farms that are in the blue box here meet the feasible balances per acre. Now if you compare the balance of the farm in the red square versus the blue circle, you will notice that the farm in the blue circle is producing a lot more per unit land than the one in the red square. So that's why we also look at the balance per hundredweight as an efficiency indicator. All the farms that are below this line, that are in what was supposed to be a yellow triangle, I'm glad I wrote yellow on the top there, but little distortion of color in this projector. The yellow triangle is all the farms that meet the feasible balances on a per hundred weight basis. And then if you combine what is supposed to be yellow with blue, you get green, sort of. And that's the farms that are in the box that are meeting the feasible balances both per hundred weight and per acre. Overlap of those two feasibility indicators. So we call that the farms that are in there have the highest nutrient use efficiency, and they can recycle for the most part the nutrients on the land base. We called that the optimal operational zone in the very first publications we put out on this concept. And talking with extension educators and talking in front of farmer and extension audience, you can't say that three times in a row and not stumble over it. So I'm just calling it the green box, and that's how it's beginning to get known as we work with this further. So farms in the green box are the ones that are meeting those feasible balances, most efficiently producing milk and with the land base to recycle the nutrients. Farms that participate in this assessment get their reports every year that they submit. This is an annual assessment. They get those reports with dots on maps compared to all their peers, and they can see how well they're doing. And if they participate multiple years, they see the trends over time. They get this report that shows the trends over time. This is just one example of a farm in the database. So they can see how they did that year compared to previous years, whether or not there's trends over time for improvement, or whether or not something happens that pushed them outside of the box one year. They can start thinking about what caused those changes and make some changes. They also get a report, and this is not going to be all that readable at the end of the room, but I wanted to show that we have a list of indicators connected to these mass balances that can give them a little bit of sense of whether to look at the crop site first or at the feeding site first or to look at some other indicators. So at least in orange highlighted the indicators that are correlated to excess balances. So this gives them a start to have discussions with their crop consultant, with their nutritionist and other crop advisors that might help them identify why they might be out of the green box and what they could do to get into it. So I mentioned this as a concept. This is how we are working with it with farms in New York State. Wanted to talk about how we can also use this to extrapolate and get a sense of, are we making progress not just in an individual farm but across watersheds, across larger groups of farms. And in this case I'm showing you the results of some assessments we did for the whole state of New York and for the Upper Susquehanna watershed, the headwaters of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. We did those mass balances, showing you the data between 2004 and 2013 for a set of almost 600 mass balances that were conducted in that time, including farms in New York State, including farms, a subset of farms in the Upper Susquehanna watershed. And what we were particularly interested in was the analysis of how many farms are in the green box and is that number changing over time. So we're using the green box as a target, see how far we go, how far we make progress with this. And we see the number of farms in the green box increasing over that time span. And that's very consistent with negative trends in partial cropland nitrogen and phosphorus balances for New York, for especially the Upper Susquehanna watershed, but also the state of New York as a whole. It's also consistent on the phosphorus side with the number of fields testing excessive for phosphorus. So very different indicators all point the same direction. More and more farms are meeting those feasible balances, and our overall P balance for the state is declining. The mass balances per hectare decreased, or per unit area, decreased over that timeline of 10 years with significant numbers, 29 to 42% statewide, 29 to 51% for the Upper Susquehanna watershed region in our state. I mentioned we want those balances to be feasible, meaning sustainability is important over the long term. Milk production did not suffer as the farms were improving their balances. So this did not go at the expense of production. And that was important to note. Reductions resulted primarily from reduced nutrients inputs, particularly the feed side of things. And that's where it also makes it important to work with nutritionists on these farms and not just the agronomist and the crop advisor. Several farms had lower concentrations on nutrients in the overall diet because of precision feeding, and farms increased their homegrown forage production, which also helped their balances over the long term. This is the summary of the total amounts of nutrients if you compare 2000, that should be 2003 versus 2014. We look at the trends here, the total numbers, and those are not numbers to dismiss easily. It's almost 30 million kilograms of nitrogen, 3 million kilograms of phosphorus not being imported onto the farms in New York as a whole state, comparing a 10-year period. The farms reduced the amount of NP entering the state by 26 and 19% respectively. Those are big numbers. Upper Susquehanna farms did the same thing. Smaller scale, smaller farms in general, but the reductions in nitrogen and phosphorus imports, 4.3 million kilograms of nitrogen, 0.4 kilograms of phosphorus. 20 to 30% less of these nutrients coming into the farm comparing 2004 to 2013. This is the summary in a more of a table form with the reduction numbers in pounds per acre for those of us working in the US and more inclined than working in the US system here. So 66 million pounds of nitrogen, 6.6 million pounds of phosphorus not being imported in the state of New York in 2013 compared to 2004. We can extrapolate those data and want to make sure everybody understands this is an extrapolation. Go outside of your database. But if you extrapolate this to all the farms in those two regions, New York State and the Upper Susquehanna region, you can do some inferences how big the potential for savings is moving forward. This data extrapolation for the Upper Susquehanna watershed was important because of TMDL issues in that watershed. It suggests that the Upper Susquehanna dairy farms can deliver up to almost 50% of their nitrogen and almost 72% of their phosphorus balance to the Chesapeake Bay, and we will still meet the TMDL for the Chesapeake Bay. So that's saying that a large portion could be delivered, suggesting that a large portion could be delivered directly from the boundary of the farm in New York State into the Chesapeake Bay. 50%, 72%. This gives you a scale measure here of how important that is. Chesapeake Bay delivery factors, what the Chesapeake Bay model assumes those factors to be, are very much lower for, especially for phosphorus. So extrapolation, because of all these reductions, and with the notification that we can deliver up to almost 50% and 72% of our N versus P pools, we are in very good shape for meeting the TMDLs in the Chesapeake Bay in 2025. That doesn't mean we don't need to do anything anymore in New York State. It shows the feasibility of meeting those benchmarks. So back to an earlier slide that I started with, we are looking at these mass balances as a farm management tool, as a monitoring tool at the farm level, but we can also start using this if enough farms participate to get some implications at the policy level and monitoring at watershed scale with this type of approach. And our hope is that more and more farms start using this and start participating across the region, not just in New York. And with that, we'll open it up for questions.
On one, you had a bar graph that showed the number of farms that were in this green box and how it changed over time. It seemed like the last bar on that graph on several had dropped quite a bit. And I was wondering what component of the mass balance is responsible for this annual variation and maybe such a sudden drop, and what does that mean for potential changes in the future and requirements in extension of the work?
That's a huge question, eh? So the question is that the variability over years, if I might paraphrase, the variability over years was the biggest driver for that. If we look at those charts and the variability for individual farms and see what happens across a larger farm database, there's a huge weather component in there. The secondary component that pushes this is also milk prices. So the weather, to explain that a little bit, percent homegrown forage is huge in driving these mass balances. So if we have a huge drought year or an excessively wet year and our forage production is compromised, the farms have to go and purchase more feed or they need to cull cows. Well, the tendency is to purchase more feed, right? So So as soon as you purchase more feed, it increases your balance. And those are annual events. So in the dairy sector, you cannot carry over your feed for 3, 4, 5 years. Right? It's very much influenced by how much forage you could produce that season. And we see that variability primarily in smaller farm units. The larger farms have capacity to stabilize that a little bit better. The smaller farms tend to be very, very sensitive to those changes from year to year. So in this upper sus, one of those dips that you see in the charts there is primarily a result of extreme weather the year before and fluctuations in the milk prices as well. That is also the reason why we tell everybody, don't do this just 1 year. Look at your longer term trends, keep going with it, and try to explain every year why you have a dip or increase in those balances.
We're going to hold questions there since that was a very long question. Thank you, Ken.